Live from the greatest city, the greatest state, the greatest country, on the second greatest planet in the solar system, it's episode number 546 of the award-winning Midday with Trey and BK. On today's show, at 11:45, we recap the action from the last Saturday here, the college football whip-around. At 11:30, where are we at in society? Married guys, you should be doing less housework for the good of your marriage. New research says so. And in mere minutes, we get back into the Longhorn struggles versus OU this weekend, including a broader look at how dual-threat QBs have fared against Todd Orlando. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today, it's the Horns fantasy sports expert and one-time gigolo, Adam Wagner. What's up, Wags?
What's up, guys?
And the one Jew in a sea of Gentiles here at the Horn, living a trucker lifestyle that includes the fastest cattle prod this side of Dirty Sixth. He is Brad Kellner.
Everybody on? Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful.
This seems like a ridiculous proposition that I'm about to make.
No yelling on the bus!
Most of your propositions are pretty ridiculous regardless. It's fun to listen to most days. How you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I did my research.
Yes.
Last night, as
dude,
I
what
promised.
Hold on a second. Is your nose about to fall off? Do you have the Michael Jackson issue going on right now where I'm about to be looking at a gaping hole where your nose once was? It does not look good right now.
A little sunburn action. Suffered from the Cotton Bowl on Saturday. Starting to peel a little bit. It's not great. It's a good thing we work in radio and
true,
not television today and every day, if we're being completely honest. But I did my research last night, as promised to you people during yesterday's Midday with Trey and BK. And Tom Herman, during his weekly Game Week press conference yesterday, was asked what was fixable from Saturday's loss to Oklahoma. And he said, everything's fixable. It's 100% fixable. He said, we'll fix it. But one of the other sentences or statements he made during that response, he said, quote, we did not do a good job of containing their quarterback, end quote.
No kidding.
And he's not wrong. Jalen Hurts, 17 carries, a team-high 131 yards rushing, had a rushing touchdown as well. So we talked about it a little bit yesterday during Shooting the Bull after the conclusion of Tom Herman's press conference. It seems like after every Texas loss, we hear the same quote from Tom Herman saying, we'll fix it. Everything is fixable, which that's the right attitude. That's the right mindset to have. You don't want to just cave in and mail it in after one loss. You want to find ways to figure it out. You want to preach confidence and optimism to your team, to your fans, that, hey, we will get this right. We are going to fix it. It's 100% fixable. But we've talked about this a lot during the 2.5-year tenure of Tom Herman and Todd Orlando as coaches at the University of Texas. Dual-threat quarterbacks have time and time again killed this Longhorn defense. And I feel like we've heard it's 100% fixable a lot when talking about dual-threat quarterbacks, and it just hasn't gotten fixed. So I did a little bit of research over Todd Orlando's tenure about how dual-threat quarterbacks have fared against the University of Texas.
Can I just make an observation based on Saturday and watching this football team versus dual-threat quarterbacks to guess at what the problem is more than anything else? Todd Orlando's insistence on running far too much man defense, which is very easy to scheme around when you have a dual threat guy, especially when you're not spying the QB. And how often did we see somebody spying Jalen Hurts on Saturday?
I don't think we did.
I don't remember seeing it either. That's frustrating.
Yeah, that's inexcusable, right?
So anyhow, I'm sorry. You continue with the research that you really looked through yesterday. I'm guessing starting in 2017.
Yeah, we'll start with 2019.
Okay.
We'll start with this year. And these are quarterbacks that I defined as dual threat. But you're right. I mean, that is a big reason for why Texas lost the game on Saturday. And I think you pin more of the blame on the offense for why Texas didn't get it done against Oklahoma, but the defense's inability to contain Jalen Hurts was a problem, and the fact that they did not have anybody in spy on that dude all game long is an inexcusably bad miss from Todd Orlando. So in my estimation, Trey, in 2019, the Texas Longhorns have gone up against two dual-threat quarterbacks. One being Jalen Hurts, who put up 131 rushing yards on Saturday. In the five other Oklahoma games, not against Texas, he's averaged 99 rushing yards per game. So over his average by about 30. Spencer Sanders was the other one from Oklahoma State. He put up 18 carries for 109 yards and a touchdown against the Longhorns. In his five games, in Oklahoma State's five games against not Texas, he's averaged 63 yards rushing. So about 46 yards difference between his average and what he gave up against Texas. Now the Longhorns, to the two dual threat quarterbacks this year, are giving up 120 rushing yards per game and an average of 6.86 yards per carry. If you look at the rush defense stats in terms of overall yards per carry against, the Longhorns only give up 4.2 yards per carry. They are doing a good job against running backs this year, but they're giving up more than 6.8 yards on the ground to quarterbacks. And by the way, those numbers include sacks that Texas has too, because sacks factor into the rushing yards in college football.
Let's be honest about the sack number. It's not a big one.
Not against Oklahoma. There were no sacks against Oklahoma that went into play. But I won't give you game-by-game stats. I'll just give the quarterbacks that I consider dual threat over the last 3 years, the last 2.5 years. So I've got those two for this year.
You're working backwards to 2018 now?
We'll go 2018.
Okay.
I went with the two Maryland quarterbacks.
Fair.
Sorry to bring up that word.
Well,
it's like Voldemort for Texas football fans, man. He who shall not be named. TCU with Sean Robinson.
Yep.
Kansas State with Black Andy Dalton, Alex Delton.
Yeah, that was a weird game because Skylar Thompson played a lot in that one too and eventually took over in the second half when somebody finally talked some sense into Bill Snyder.
Yep, the two Kyler Murray games.
Yep.
And Jet Duffy of Texas Tech.
Yeah, that's true.
And then in 2017, I only consider two of the quarterbacks Texas went up against dual threat. Alex Delton.
Agreed.
Who actually played really well. That was the double overtime game here in Austin in which Sam Ellinger really broke out.
Came on in relief of Ertz in that game.
Yep. And then the two Maryland quarterbacks from the season opener. So on average, in Todd Orlando's 2.5 year tenure as the defensive coordinator at the University of Texas, he is allowing 77 rush yards per game to opposing quarterbacks, to opposing dual threat quarterbacks. An average of 5.33 yards per carry, and also one touchdown a game to mobile quarterbacks. Let me compare that to the overall stat. So I mentioned 5.33 yards per carry against dual threat quarterbacks. Texas, as a defense, as a team, is only allowing 3.55 yards per carry in Todd Orlando's tenure. So running backs have not been the problem. It is the dual-threat quarterbacks that have given this defense issues time and time again. Once again, we keep hearing that it's fixable, but it's actually getting worse here in 2019. They have not found a way to figure out how to contain dual-threat quarterbacks. That almost cost Texas against Oklahoma State. That definitely cost the Longhorns against the Sooners.
The problem with that, if you look at the remaining schedule, Kansas shouldn't be too big of an issue. TCU, they obviously have glaring issues at that quarterback position. They don't know what to do offensively right now other than hand the ball off to Darius Anderson. Kansas State, for all the good things Skylar Thompson is capable of, he's not the most efficient of runners. Iowa State with Brock Purdy and Baylor with Charlie Brewer, again, probably not considered dual threat guys, but they are very crafty with their legs too. And that is something that both offensive coordinators will certainly try to scheme to play up for the advantage of their programs versus this Longhorn defense. You could also argue that those are the two toughest games left on UT's schedule too.
Yeah, and I think maybe, you know, those guys aren't pure runners. I wouldn't consider them dual threat. Now, they can't take off and run. I agree with you 100%. But maybe that's a positive sign for the rest of the Longhorn defense, is that they've played the two best rushing quarterbacks that are going to play this year. Now, obviously, if the Longhorns get to the Big 12 championship, presumably against Oklahoma, they're going to have to see Jalen Hurts, who might be the best dual threat quarterback in the country. They're going to have to see that dude again. But you're right. I mean, I am worried about guys like Brock Purdy and Charlie Brewer taking off against this defense because too often they lose contain on the defensive line. They're not disciplined when they are rushing the quarterback, and they give up too many rushing lanes to opposing quarterbacks, which is causing problems.
I honestly wonder, and this is maybe a strange thing to say in football, but if there's too much emphasis being put on trying to get to that point of attack versus understanding what your assignment is, what the integrity is in terms of what you're doing within a gap or what you're doing and trying to set the edge too. Oklahoma had a field day getting to the outside of this defense throughout the game, but especially through the first two or three quarters, where guys are trying to meet the ball carrier in the backfield versus taking a step or two outside and forcing them back in. It's like, it's almost like the football version of hero ball, where everybody wants to be the guy that makes that big play, that makes that big hit, that makes that tackle for a loss, versus understanding that it is such a team game. And sometimes you doing your job is as heroic as the guy who actually gets the official stat credited.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, you want to force guys inside. You want to force them to help, for sure. And look, I don't want to pin this entire loss on the defense. I'm not going to. I mean, this defense only gave up 10 points at halftime. Oklahoma only had 20 points at the end of the third quarter. If you would have told me that before the game, I would have signed up for that in a heartbeat. Yep. And I would have told you, yeah, Texas is probably winning like 34-20 or something like that. I would have figured the Longhorns would have been in control if they had held Oklahoma to that offensive output. But obviously in the fourth quarter, the two long touchdown drives for the Sooners proved to be costly. And I haven't even brought up missed tackles. You want to talk about issues that are supposedly fixable that have not been fixed here at the University of Texas, and this goes beyond the Todd Orlando, Tom Herman era here. This is like a decade-long issue at UT. The missed tackles are still a problem. Those need to be fixed if Texas wants to get to the Big 12 championship game.
That's a bigger problem for me right now than the dual-threat quarterback thing, which is obviously concerning, but you just mentioned it. They only play a couple dual-threat quarterbacks, true dual-threat quarterbacks, on their schedule each and every year. Tackling is something you have to do every game, and there are going to be opponents that are difficult to tackle on pretty much every football team, maybe with the exception of the Rice Owls or the occasional other lesser opponent in the non-conference portion of the schedule. And that is something where we've been promised time and time again this year and in years past that they're going to put more focus, more emphasis, more effort into proper form tackling. But actions speak louder than words. Mm-hmm. And we still see a lot more guys laying out, going for kill shots, making no effort to wrap up, making no effort to keep their base underneath them, not to get juked out of their shoes.
Yep.
And in the process, not only are they missing tackles, they're injuring themselves a large chunk of the time now as well.
Yeah, they are. That's a good point. It's Midday with Trey and BK, continuing to break down Texas-Oklahoma. Rod Babers, host of the Rodcast from 1-3, he tweeted this out. He conservatively counted 21 missed tackles by the Longhorns on Saturday. And he said conservatively because he didn't include bad angles or plays in which Texas just didn't get their hands on the ball carrier. Like, that's how you statistically quantify a missed tackle. Mm-hmm. You actually have to get your hands on the ball carrier for it to count as a missed tackle. So the CeeDee Lamb ridiculous touchdown, in which there were five Longhorn defenders standing right around him, there was only two missed tackles on that play because only two of the five guys were able to get their hands on the Oklahoma defender. So 21 is a conservative number, but really it was way, way more than that. And Trey, I want to ask you what you thought of Tom Herman's quote yesterday. He was asked about the missed tackles, and he said, quote, "We need to be able to tackle better. We've got to teach them to do that." Oh, thanks, Coach. Appreciate that. But he's also said that they have limited tackling in practice over the last few weeks. Now, in large part due to the number of injuries they've had on the defensive side of the football, they really can't afford to have too many more guys get hurt on that side. But they haven't been running tackling drills that often in practice, and that definitely showed up on Saturday.
I don't necessarily think the answer is being more physical in the one practice per week that you get to hit one another, because they hit plenty in fall practice heading into the first game of the season at the end of August, and the tackling issue was something that was glaring game two of the season. So it's not necessarily about hitting more in practice, it's about teaching the proper form. One of the best tackling teams that I can recall would have been the mid-2000s team. I think it was a team that Rod Babers may have actually been on in 2001 or 2002. And this was at a time where they actually allowed fans to come out and watch the first couple of practices before they shut things down. And there was something specific I saw every defensive back do, even when they weren't really hitting. It was prior to pads coming on. Every defensive player, when they would run up on the ball carrier, would bring his arms back and bring them forward right when he would have, in theory, been contacting the ball carrier. And that's something that actually carried over to the game as well. So tackling these padded dummies or hitting one another harder or doing more bull in the ring or things like that, Oklahoma drill, you know, those are nice and they have a certain effect, but there is also a technique that is absolutely being lost on these guys right now, especially guys in the secondary.
We knew going into the year that there could be some issues with this Longhorn defense, right? I mean, they lost 8 starters from a year ago. You can go back decades and not find a less experienced Texas defense when it comes to returning production. I mean, this team lost a ton from last year's bunch. And we figured, okay, there's going to be some growing pains. There's going to be some issues. There's going to be some things that take some time to really figure out. But we also thought that the potential for this defense was higher than the potential of last year's defense.
Sure.
And I know there's been a lot of injuries this year, but right now Texas has the 97th ranked defense in college football. Like, for a team that went into the year with conference championship goals and potential Final Four playoff goals, that is not going to fly. I mean, this offense is very, very good, but this defense just isn't doing its job right now, and missed tackles continue to become a problem. And I don't know how confident I am that things are going to get fixed for the last 6 weeks of the season. There's some weaker opponents on the schedule for sure, but man, we're gonna have to see a whole lot more out of that unit to expect this team to get to Jerry World in December.
No doubt about that. And I've seen a faction of Longhorn people on Twitter suggesting that the biggest issue with the defense right now is injuries. And while that is certainly a factor, I'm not going as far as calling it the biggest factor, because this has been something that has been a problem going back to the start of the season when this defense was much healthier, and going back the last couple of years too. So injuries are certainly a factor. It makes a difference not having starters at certain positions. But the other thing regarding specifically the tackling, we just talked about it. Part of it is how they are tackling that is leading to these injuries. It's not like it's a fluke ACL tear. It's guys continuing to suffer stingers and shoulder injuries because they're flying in trying to make these highlight reel hits versus proper form tackling.
And you know what's a unit on the defensive side of the football that hasn't really dealt with injuries? That's the defensive line. And they struggled mightily over the last couple of weeks. No sacks on the opposing quarterbacks for the last 2 weeks. That's been an interesting thing as well. But just more breaking down, Oklahoma 34, Texas 27. You need to have a schematic advantage against a team with like talent as you. Like, this isn't 2005 Texas where you don't have to have the best game plan. You just know that our guy is better than your guy. That's not where Texas quite is as a football program yet. And I just don't think the Texas coaches did enough to give this team a schematic advantage on Saturday. We talked about it on defense. Not spying Jalen Hurts made no sense to me. Not even adjusting at some point mid-game when he time and time again was picking up yards, scrambling, not adjusting to that. That makes no sense. But more of that to me falls on the offensive side of the football.
Yep.
I just didn't think there were enough adjustments made. It was such a vanilla game plan too. I mean, all last week we're thinking, all right, this is the game you pull out all the stops. You pull out all the stops, trick plays, take some shots, whatever. You're going up against your biggest rival. This is a must-win game if you still want to make the college football playoff. You're not going to hold anything back in this game. And it was just a very vanilla, basic offensive game plan by Texas, and there just weren't a lot of adjustments made throughout the game.
And outside of the third quarter, there wasn't much of an effort made to run the football either. That was a major mistake that they made in the first half.
I didn't think there were enough deep shots that they took.
That now, too.
I get it can be discouraging when your receivers drop 3 or 4 of them in a row. I get that that can be a little bit discouraging as a head coaching staff. But, man, in the second half when Texas started taking some shots, they were either converting them or they were drawing pass interference penalties on Oklahoma. And one thing that I really would have liked to see more of on Saturday from this offense, Trey, running back screens. Not the quick snap, throw it to Devin Duvernay in the slot, like the extension of the running play. Just a straight-up halfback slip screen if you're playing a game of Madden football. Because Oklahoma's defense was so aggressive on Saturday. That is how you counteract an aggressive defense. Some sort of delayed screen like that. Texas tried it once, and it kind of worked. They didn't try that nearly enough. They didn't do enough to combat the aggressiveness from the Oklahoma defense. There just weren't a whole lot of adjustments that I thought were made on Saturday that really could have helped this offense. And I know the defense didn't play perfectly well. Man, even 34 points, which is what they ended with, I figured that would be enough to give this Texas team a chance to win this football game on Saturday. 3 points in one half. It took too long for Texas to really adjust what they were doing on offense.
You know, that's an interesting point about throwing it to the running backs a little bit more, because it feels like that's something that has dwindled as the season has gone on. And just looking at the stats from the last three games now, going back to Oklahoma State, each running back only caught one ball out of the backfield. The game after that, West Virginia, each guy only caught one ball out of the backfield. That's something that is a key to the Tom Herman offense, as much as having a talented guy in that slot position to catch as many balls as we've seen LJ Humphrey go with last year and Devin Duvernay go with this year too. So that, perhaps that is something that they re-examine and make sure that they're doing more of in the immediate future.
It's just, you need a schematic advantage to beat teams with like talent. I will say that again, and Texas just didn't have it on Saturday, and it's kind of a scary proposition. You know, it's one game. It's one game between Texas and Oklahoma, and Tom Herman is, what, 1-3 now against Lincoln Riley in his career at the University of Texas. But right now, you feel like your biggest rival, your biggest roadblock to winning a conference championship, has a better offensive coach and a better defensive coach than you have. That is kind of a scary proposition for this team moving forward.
It feels like coaches on both sides of the ball also have an issue with trying so hard to make every single one of their guys these dynamic players that they don't really have these set roles, these foundational roles that they can always turn back to if whatever else that you're going with doesn't work. And the most glaring example for me is a guy who is arguably playing better than anybody on the defensive side of the ball. Joseph Osai, in my opinion, has been the defensive MVP for this football team this year. Went back and watched the game last night. There were literally three or four times where he was 20-plus yards off the line of scrimmage defending a wide receiver. That is not using that guy correctly. And I understand that Lincoln Riley is doing a good job at times of motioning guys into coverages that worked into his advantage. Guess what? You need to figure that out on your end to make sure that a guy like Joseph Osai is not leaving the line of scrimmage, especially when you're having so many issues with one, stopping the run, two, getting after the quarterback, and three, containing Jalen Hurts when he actually does tuck it and run after his first read isn't open.
Texas falls to Oklahoma 34-27. We'll continue to break it down on this show and on all the shows here on the Horn before we turn the page and talk Texas-Kansas, which is coming up on Saturday. Hopefully a game where the Longhorns can get back on track against the bottom feeders of the Big 12. Tom Herman said it yesterday. The same quote applies today, I think. Yes, the sun came up, which is always a good thing. You can't let a loss beat you twice. There's a lot for this team to work on. I'm sure they are working hard in practice this week. But, man, the issues, we keep hearing that it's fixable, but a lot of similar issues continue to rear their ugly heads for this Texas football team.
Honestly, part of letting a loss beat you twice, BK, is not learning from your mistakes and making the necessary adjustments. That's what we need to see going forward out of this football team. And sadly, we're not really going to know over the next couple of games whether it's something that takes, because the next two opponents just aren't that good.
It should be winnable games with Kansas and then at TCU next weekend. All right, it is midday with Trey and BK. The Specs text line is open, 337-3776. Your thoughts on Texas's loss to Oklahoma. What stood out to you? What needs to be fixed for this Horns team moving forward? We will continue to talk more about this throughout the show, also get into Cowboys-Jets, but we've got Where Are We At in Society coming up. You men out there, you married men out there, apparently it would be better for you to do less work around the house. Make sure your wives are listening to this.
Yeah, tell that to Katie.
That's next.
Memories are just where you lay down.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. Wags, is this Fuel? Yeah, I like this song back in the day. This is another good one from the 90s, and don't you dare be bagging on the quality of music that came out of that decade. We're not judging the entire decade based on Creed, okay?
I will bag or bash the entire decade of the 90s.
You love hip-hop.
For more than just music. I just bash the entire decade for its existence.
For its existence.
For its existence.
You realize you were born in the middle of the decade.
I ain't that great.
Okay, whoa. That's breaking news right there.
Terry Bradshaw talking about Sam Ellinger. I ain't that great. I ain't that great. World could go without me, right?
No. We could. No. World's better off with you right now.
I'm telling you, man. We might have to do that for tomorrow's Wednesday Power Rankings. We power rank the decades. And I know. Ooh. I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage, technically, because I've only been around for three of them now. I feel like I know enough about what went on in certain decades in this country to where I can feel confident in putting a good list together.
So ain't that good?
Are we going back? How far are we going back here? How far are we allowed to go back with the decade?
1776.
What?
No, let's go two decades.
Start of history. Let's go two decades.
Let's go back to the 60s,
No, we're not
perhaps?
Doing individual years. We're doing decades.
50s or 60s?
In two decades. We got to rank five of them, Wags. What are you talking about? Yeah, like 1750s, 1760s.
No, 1950s.
1776, when history started. Everything before that doesn't matter, except on the Jewish calendar. We've been going for 5,780 years. That matters. Big year for the Jews out there.
Yes, we have a lesser Jewish holiday to talk about.
Like when music became prominent, though, right?
Are we talking about decades in general or decades based on music?
I think based off of music.
I don't know.
Ooh. Okay.
We'll figure that out.
All right.
Off-mic conversations that we're having on the mic.
Go ahead and let you know that the aughts in 2010s are going to be pretty low on that list.
For music?
Yes.
Or for decades in general? You could probably make a case for both.
Both.
Yeah, people aren't too fond of the people who have grown up in the aughts, that's for damn sure. All right, it's midday with Trey and BK. We'll get back into some football conversations. Our college football whip around in about 10 minutes, which will take a look at all of the action across the country of week 7 of the college football season, including the top 25 matchups and what went down in the Big 12 conference. But right now, we've got a bit to get to. It is time for...
Where are we at in society today?
This segment brought to you by Student Loan Payment Lawn Care. Call or text Jake today for a free estimate, 512-653-0687. First-time clients receive 25% off. Visit slplawncare.com for more details.
Come out to the Ellinghouse every couple of weeks. Our lawn looks fantastic as a result. Find out for yourself. They will mow your lawn, trim trees and bushes, rake leaves, and more. slplawncare.com. 25% off that first job. BK, I'm going to turn to Wags on this one because, well, you're not, well, you live with a roommate right now, but you're not living with a significant other. You're not married. You're not living with a girlfriend or anything like that, and probably never plan on being so. Knocking on wood there.
Knocking on wood.
He's a winner, huh?
Praying that doesn't change.
Wags, as the other married guy on the show, how much of the housework do you do in the Wagner abode?
Oh, and I know she's listening too, so I have to be super honest. I clean the poopers, and I clean the bathtub.
The toilets?
Yeah, the toilets, and I clean the tub. Usually that's the go-to for me. That's the thing that I can't do the dish. Like, I know the dishes aren't hard.
Oh, I love doing dishes.
But I can't stand it. It's just one of those. And folding laundry. I can't stand folding laundry. I know usually the basket comes
love
and gets set.
Too.
Well, it gets set in front of me. Usually that's her go-to. She sets the laundry in front of me while the football game's on, and I have to fold laundry while I watch football.
So you have two jobs? You have to clean the toilets and clean the tub,
three,
and you're mad?
Three.
What's the third?
To fold the laundry.
Oh, you do have to fold the laundry.
Yeah.
Three jobs.
Something aesthetically pleasing about folding laundry for me. But
I mean, I go out and I win the bread and I do all the hunting. And
You work in radio.
Yeah,
you don't win the bread.
We don't win any bread. She makes way more money than I do.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what?
That's not. I did more chores around the house as a damn kid.
Well, yeah.
This guy does.
Well, I got a 12-year-old now,
because,
too, though.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's because you are indentured servitude under your parents' rule. And I'm sure Reed does a fair amount of choring that
we
got
to push him towards it. But yeah, if it didn't go towards Reed, I would be responsible for doing it.
And I have to give you credit for a couple of extra chores, too, because doing the bathrooms, that job sucks.
It's horrendous.
It's not that bad.
So many other things I would rather do than clean toilets.
And I clean it more because of my dog started drinking from the toilet bowl. So I actually clean it more because of my dog.
Nasty-ass dogs do that as well.
Put the damn seat down.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. She gets up.
Nasty dogs. I feel like... toilet water is like vitamin water for
dogs. Yeah, it's like chilled water or something. It's always chilled.
Extra little bit of flavor that they're not getting from the regular tap water that we give them in the bowl.
I'm looking for more flavor out of my water.
Yellow?
You know what? I'm not going to suggest that you do it, but if you do, please let us know how that goes.
We'll do BK Investigates.
No.
On the taste of toilet water.
BK Investigates.
I'm only doing it at my place. I'm not going to a public restroom and trying this bit.
Oh, you're not gonna follow anybody into the men's room on the fourth floor here.
I also take the trash out. Man, I'm learning a lot about myself.
Well, you know what, Wags?
It takes 10 seconds. Golly, you guys.
You may want to consider scaling all of what you're doing around the house back.
Too much?
the good of your marriage.
Oh.
That's because, according to a new report out of Norway, couples may be better off living in a traditional household if they want to stay together. Traditional household means a home where women pretty much do all the housework.
Oh, gender roles.
Yeah, that would fly in this country in 2019. No doubt about that.
Yeah, sure it would. Norwegian researchers examined 20,000 married men and women who also, of course, cohabitate to see how they divided housework and childcare throughout various life stages. Researchers found that men who did as much or more of the housework were more likely to get divorced than couples where the women did most of the housework over a period of 4 years.
Why? I'm wondering.
Quote, the more a man does in the home, the higher the divorce rate, according to a co-author of the study, Thomas Hansen. So there you have it. It didn't give the reason as to why, other than maybe the woman who's doing all the housework perhaps being afraid to leave her husband for whatever reason. Perhaps the husband truly is the breadwinner in this non-radio marriage. And so she understands that he's the one who pays the bills, and they understand the set roles. But that's also not as realistic in 2019, especially here in the States.
Yeah.
Family chores around the house, and it's also taking care of the kids.
Yeah, child care and housework.
So you're more likely to get divorced if you split up that work 50-50 than you are if the woman just does everything.
So if you're a deadbeat dad, you really want to go to Nova Scotia. Or no, wait, it's not Nova Scotia. Where are we? Norway. That's where it's at. Norway.
Yes, Norway, or, well, let's be honest, here in the States, if you just want to stay stateside, just go to Florida.
There you go.
So,
now, can you guys do me a favor?
What's up?
This is not just to you two. This might be to all the people out there. Will you go home and present this to your significant others and see what happens and get it on film for me?
I'm shocked I haven't gotten a text.
Oh, at the end, you could say it's a joke. At the end, you could be like, I'm just kidding. I heard it on the radio. But I would love to see some unfiltered wife reactions from you trying this bit at home.
That's say, actually...
I really care about our marriage. I love you. I want us to be together forever. When I had made my vows, we said forever and ever, amen, and until death do us part, and I don't want that to change. And there's research out there that shows that I can't do the work around the house
buying
if
his
I
stuff.
Want our marriage to last forever. So I'm going to need you to start taking over the roles around the house.
He sounds good.
Because I love you so much. And I care about you so much.
Is a great thing to ask the listeners right now to do and post it to Twitter with the hashtag TreyandBK so that we can see, or at least tag us in the video so that we can see the reaction of your person to you going home and saying, look, I'm sorry.
You've got to sell it as well as I did. Yeah,
I can no longer take out the garbage or do the dishes.
I better have Sam on standby.
Or clean the bathrooms. And you tell her when you mention all of that.
Why is that, honey?
I'm sorry. I'm not going to do that for us, dear.
For our marriage.
For us.
Because I love you and I love our family and I don't want anything bad to happen to our family, honey.
You realize how she's going to look at you?
Oh,
I don't have a she to do this to.
I already tried this one with Justine.
I was going to say, I would ask you guys to try it to your significant others, but they're probably both listening right now.
Absolutely.
So, well.
We can't have that happen. Well, that is awesome. Norway, not bad. That's got to be Norway's best contribution to society in the last 150 years. Have they done anything else? They've had some hockey players, probably. They're the Scandinavians, right? That's
IKEA
their bit.
IKEA is Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Swedish meatballs.
That's about it for Norway.
Are Swedish meatballs Norway?
Yeah, Swedish fish. No.
That's probably Sweden.
Swedish meatballs are Sweden.
Swedish girls, that's Sweden.
Also Sweden.
We got some Vikings. Norway, the Norwegian Vikings.
Leif Erikson.
Norwegian wood.
See one of those guys?
Oslo.
That's
one of the great big cities of the world. Norway?
Ooh, Tiger Woods' ex-wife.
Yes, Ellen.
Elin Nordigan. She's Norwegian.
Are you sure she's Norwegian, or are you just basing that on how her last name sounds?
Little of both. Perhaps. All right, there's where we at in society today. A new Norwegian study says that if you make your significant other, if you make the woman in your relationship do more of the housework, your marriage is more likely to be successful. Meanwhile, to put those words together, but that's what I wanted to say.
Somebody said, wifey already responded, nice try, honey, but we don't live in Norway.
Don't say it's a Norwegian study. Say it's a worldwide study that's going on out there. All right, good stuff right there. Nice find, Trey. Where are we at in society today? Brought to you by SLPLawnCare.com. It is midday with Trey and BK. Believe it or not, we are already 7 weeks into the 2019 college football season. It's a College Football Tuesday. Let's tell you what happened. We'll run down the scoreboard of the top 25 teams, also what happened in the Big 12, some of our biggest takeaways and storylines from the seventh week of the college football season. It's next.
I like school, and I like football, and I'm going to keep doing them both because they make me feel good.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK, it's time for the college football whip around. We take a look back at the action from the previous weekend, mostly on Saturday. There is the occasional Thursday and or Friday game from Top 25 and around the Big 12 as well. It's sponsored by a guy that you should really be in touch with if you want to enhance your game-watching abilities in your home or perhaps your place of business. It's Tom McKay of Audiovisual Consultations. Go to avconsultations.com to find out more, and go to texasstars.com to find out about a couple more of Tom McKay's passions. That is the hockey team here in town and also the Texas Stars Foundation doing great things here in Central Texas, BK.
All right, week seven. The 2019 college football season is in the books. We'll start with the AP Top 25, at least last week's AP Top 25. Action from this past Friday, where 13th-ranked Oregon knocks off Colorado 45-3. Are we bought in on the Ducks? They're seemingly the Pac-12's final hope to make the college football playoff. They're still ranked outside of the top 10, but they are 5-1. Do we think they have a shot?
An outside shot, yes. Next week's game at Washington may go a ways in determining whether or not the Ducks are contenders or pretenders.
Trey, the ACC sucks. Worst Power 5 conference in college football, and there's some non-Power 5 conferences that are better than the ACC right now. Number 20, Virginia, loses on the road to Miami 17-9. One of the worst college football games you've probably never watched. It was bad. There was only one ACC team currently ranked in the top 25. That is, of course, Clemson, who is number 3.
Yeah, just bad offenses on both sides for the Cavs and the Hurricanes, and the Hurricanes squeak one out at home. They were actually favored, even though the Virginia was the ranked team going into that one. That's because Virginia is just terrible on offense. How bad? 12 total points in the last six quarters, all of those on field goals.
Trey, we're 7 weeks in. There are four teams in college football who have not played a team with a current winning record. Clemson is one of them.
Wow.
They've been very fortunate this year schedule-wise.
Thanks, Aggies.
Yeah. On to Saturday, speaking of the Aggies, number one Alabama on the road in Aggie land. They win and cover against Texas A&M 47-28. Four more touchdowns for Tua Tagovailoa.
So good. Set the Alabama all-time passing touchdowns record, and he's also leading the country in touchdown passes this year with 27.
Fun Heisman race between he and Joe Burrow. Number two, Clemson. The aforementioned Tigers all over Florida State, 45-14. Good bounce-back game for Trevor Lawrence. Clemson's still pretty good, and Florida State is still pretty bad.
Yeah, 21st straight win for the Tigers. Keep an eye on T. Higgins. He actually didn't play in the second half of that game with a hamstring injury. We know here in Austin that hamstring injuries and wide receivers don't go well together.
The biggest upset, perhaps, of the 2019 season happened between the hedges on Saturday as Will Muschamp, Coach Boom, and the South Carolina Gamecocks go into Athens and knock off third-ranked Georgia 20-17 in overtime. What a game. What an upset. That one happened during Texas OU. I didn't even hear about it until after the state fair. Went back and watched it. What a disappointing performance by UGA at home. Their chances of making the college football playoff took a huge hit because they've got some tough games left up ahead.
Despite the fact that the Cocks lost their quarterback, Ryan Helinski, with a knee injury early in that one, they got a lot in the way of Jake Fromm uncharacteristically shooting himself and his team in the foot. Had four turnovers in that game, including three interceptions. He hadn't thrown an interception through the first five games of the year, 111 attempts. One of those interceptions went for a pick six.
Yeah, the fake USC with their third-string quarterback knocks off Georgia on the road. Game of the weekend, at least in terms of rankings on paper. Yep. Fifth-ranked LSU over Florida, 42-28. The Tigers score the last 21 points in this contest. Hell of an atmosphere at Death Valley and a really, really good competitive game between these two squads.
It's funny to see what LSU is doing this year, to see just how they are just turning what you know about football upside down. First off, the time of possession battle. They had it for 21 minutes. Florida nearly doubled that, but of course LSU wins by 14 points. How about this one as well? Just what you think about LSU offensively versus what they become this year. They averaged 10.6 yards per play versus the Gators, BK. That's the most ever that they have averaged versus a ranked opponent or an SEC opponent. That's how good they are offensively this year.
And they could still run it. 13 carries, 134, two tutties for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. The game in Dallas, we're going to skip that.
Also impressive for the LSU offensive line to not allow a single sack allowed or throw in an interception, considering that Florida led the FBS going into that game in interceptions and was also tops in the SEC in sacks.
Trey, how good is Wisconsin?
They're pretty good.
They dominate Michigan State 38-0 in Madison. The Badgers now 6-0 on the season. They are all the way up to number 6 in the AP Top 25. They get Illinois this week and then a trip to Columbus to take on the Ohio State next weekend. That should be fun.
Fourth shutout of the year versus Michigan State for Wisconsin. It's about to be 5 after they face Illinois this weekend. They're actually the first team since 1967 with 4 shutouts in their first 6 games. That 67 team was the Oklahoma Sooners.
How about that? Notre Dame, the 9th-ranked Irish, they were comfortably cruising. They were up 20-3 at one point over USC, their rivals from the West Coast. USC comes all the way back. Notre Dame wins it 30-27. Some controversy at the end with an onside kick in which Brian Kelly was on the field. Nothing was called, and Notre Dame escapes the Trojans.
How about this telling stat for the Clay Helton era in, or at USC, rather? They've now lost a turnover battle in 19 straight games. And they also have a personal foul in 15 straight games.
They've lost the turnover battle in 19 straight games?
Yep, according to The Athletic.
That doesn't even sound possible. Wow. On to the Big Ten, where we had Big Ten things happening in Iowa City. 10th-ranked Penn State, 17-12 over Nate Stanley and Iowa. Penn State, a perfect 6-0. The Big Ten's got some teams this year, man.
Yeah, Iowa's terrible on offense. What do you know, Nate the, what do you call him?
Nate the mediocre, yep.
Nate the mediocre throws a fourth-quarter interception that led to the Penn State touchdown to make it 17-6, a lead that they would not give up.
14th-ranked Boise State all over Hawaii, 59-37. 15th-ranked Utah on the road at Oregon State. I think they were only like 8.5-point favorites. They kill Oregon State 52-7. Utah still only one loss.
Yeah, I'd love to see Utah getting Zach Moss back, the talented ball carrier. He didn't even play in the second half, but had 5 rushes for 121 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Number 16, Michigan on the road at Illinois, 42-25. It's never pretty with the Wolverines, but they get the victory there.
You know what? Interesting game this next weekend. Penn State has to travel to Ann Arbor to face that Michigan squad. The Wolverines will let people know whether or not they've shaken whatever the hell happened a few weeks back versus Wisconsin.
I'm taking Penn State in that one.
Me too.
How about the freshman, Jaden Daniels for Arizona State? He continues to impress. A true freshman, the 18th-ranked Sun Devils, led by Herm Edwards, they knock off Washington State 38-34, 363 and 4 total touchdowns for Jaden Daniels.
I've got to give you credit on this one. You were the first guy on the Jaden Daniels train, and he does do it again. That game-winning touchdown with 34 seconds left, a 17-yard run. It's his third game this year that he's actually led the Sun Devils to a come-from-behind victory, also versus Michigan State and Cal.
What do you know? Another ACC team that was ranked last week that is not ranked anymore, 19th-ranked Wake Forest. They lose a barn burner, 62-59. We could spend a whole segment on this game. It was thrilling, but we're not because the ACC is not worth our time. How about the game in Waco?
Wow.
Double overtime. Baylor 33, Texas Tech 30, the Bears 6-0, undefeated, still 3-0 in the Big 12 as well. Some serious controversy. Texas Tech got screwed in this game, but it's cool. The Big 12 apologized on Sunday. A bogus snap infraction call cost Texas Tech a chance at the win in Waco.
Yeah, Tech should have won that football game. Unfortunate for Matt Wells and his guys. The thing about Baylor, they are the third best team in the conference right now. Standings-wise, they're actually number 2 ahead of the Longhorns. They've got to figure out how to get things going on offense a little bit earlier in ball games versus the better competition that they're facing in the last part of the schedule.
Yeah, only 3 points at halftime for Baylor, but they found a way to get it done against the Red Raiders. Temple knocks off Memphis, another upset for the Temple Owls, 30-28 over the Tigers. And Cincinnati, after their big win over UCF, they go down to the U of H against the tanking Houston Cougars and win 38-23. All right, Big 12 action. We've given you 2 of the games. There's something that happened in Dallas that I don't really like talking about very much. Baylor knocks off Texas Tech, and the only other Big 12 game from this past Saturday. Iowa State on the road. They go to Morgantown and dismantle West Virginia 38-14. This game was 14 all at halftime, but all Cyclones in the second half. 38-14. Iowa State now 2-1 in the Big 12. All right, there it is. That is our college football whip around for week 7 of the college football season. All 10 teams of the Big 12 back in action this weekend. Your best game? Probably Baylor at Oklahoma State. Of course, the Longhorns will take on the Kansas Jayhawks Saturday night at 6 o'clock at DKR. College football whip around from week 7 brought to you by Audio Visual Consultations. No Ari Tepkin. We usually talk to one of the hosts of the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. He will not join us today. We will tell you why. But also, we'll get back into some Texas OU, and we'll continue to break down what the hell is going on with the Dallas Cowboys, including Jerry Jones said something about Jason Garrett this morning that will make you want to pull your hair out. Not just one hair, all of the hairs. We'll tell you what Jerry said next.